I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that sees two movies with something in common go head-to-head to see which one does it better. On this week's
Halloween Countdown Show.
In the red corner.
One, two, Freddy's coming for you.
Yes, if you're of a certain age, get ready to have those terrifying memories that you've long since buried reawakened, as the combination of knitwear and knives has never been so terrifying. From 1984, We're Never Sleeping Again, It's a Nightmare on Elm Street.
The kids of Elm Street don't know it yet, but something is coming to get them.
There's something out there, isn't there?
You can just see cuts happening.
What did that, Lieutenant?
I don't know.
While in the blue corner... Oh no, not the bees! Not the bees! No, we're not putting you through the joy of the Wicker Man remake 2 weeks in a row. Instead, we're heading to Chicago, where an urban legend turns out to be a little less legendy and a little more murdery than everyone thought. After a nosy grad student gets more than she bargained for, from 1992, we're talking Candyman.
Have you ever heard of Candyman? If you look in the mirror, you say his name 5 times.
In cities everywhere,
Candyman,
they whisper his name.
Right. Candyman.
It's just a story.
Candyman.
Just a ghost story.
Candyman.
So what connects these two films? And which one does it better? Let's find out. It's Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken!
Hello, Clash Putters! Whatever you do, don't fall asleep. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris Tilly.
Hey! Welcome back, Victoria!
Thank you so much.
It's good to have you here. You've been off for 2 weeks.
Yep. Gah!
The fun you've missed.
I haven't heard, but but I'm sure it was crazy times in here.
More importantly, have you missed us?
Of course I've missed you.
Of course you have.
So it was my twin son's birthday and I was going to bring you some cake today, but I tasted it and it was fucking horrible. So I didn't.
Did you make him?
I did. Was I making it? I'm not just slagging off Marks and Spencer's. No, I made it. That's why I've been off for 2 weeks, because I was making cakes and they're horrible. Horrible. Right. Like a rock. It came out of the oven like a rock.
So now you've offered me children's birthday cake that you're not giving me, and Alex offered us Tom Cruise Christmas cake that wasn't given to us.
That's true.
I don't like this. If I'm going to do cake, you can have cake. Yeah.
Just to sort of separate out the two, the cake I receive every year from Tom Cruise is delicious. It's not a rock, and it doesn't take him 2 weeks to make.
I'll tell you
he's
what.
He's a genius. He made it on a motorcycle falling out of a plane.
He's so scared of losing it.
The cake I made will still be good at Christmas, because that's how hard it is, so I'll bring it to you.
What were you going for? What flavour?
Just chocolate cake.
Sort of base level cake.
Yeah, yeah, it's really hard to fuck it up.
And while we're here, it's worth mentioning what Christopher is dressed as for this show. The jumper is spot on Freddy Krueger.
Mm.
That is not a fedora.
No, this is just a hat lying around when keep the sun off my bald head.
Yeah.
So it's the closest I had in the house.
It's a pork pie hat.
I'm really hot, though.
I think, given the temperature in here, it's just an endurance test to see how long you can last.
My face is going to melt, a bit like Freddy's.
Yeah, we should ring a bell when you take it off. Not in like a stripper way, but like, anyway.
I mean, not that I frequent that many strip clubs, but I don't think they have a bell. Like, ding, 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 ding.
Boobs out.
Another layer off.
Yes, that's how it works. There's a pound. Take it off. No?
No, because, I mean, the problem with that scenario is the drinks are very expensive in strip clubs. So
you've heard.
So I've heard. They want to keep you in there a long time. And the temptation would be then, if it's the ringing of a bell that hurries up the performance, then people would bring their own bells, have one Diet Coke, and ding, 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 ding.
That's true.
I'm done. I'm out.
That's true.
Mm. So we are doing on this week's show Nightmare on Elm Street versus Candyman, or as I'm calling it, the Augmented Appendage Altercation.
Nick, I'll write that down for the Twitter.
These were films that you gave us, Christopher. You gave a clue last week, which was Idle Hands, The Devil's Playground. You then followed that up on Twitter. At ClashPod is our Twitter handle. Join us. The lads are going out on the slash.
Yeah, our American friends might not get that. I don't think they have on the lash as a phrase.
Okay.
But yeah, it means to drink beer till you fall over.
Yep.
Especially if it's me.
A lot of beer. We can't read out the winner, unfortunately, because timelines, what we're talking about now hasn't yet come to pass. But believe me when I say, if you got the right answer, you will be heralded as a champion online on Twitter. So join us there at ClashPod. Shall we do the connections?
Go for it. Go on, Vicky. What you got?
Let's end on a fire.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
Lynched by an angry mob.
Yep.
Yep. And okay. The unintended creation of supernatural murderous men as a long-term effect of lynch mobbing.
I've got ceiling blood. Both films involve blood dripping through the ceiling from the room above. Johnny Depp in A Nightmare on Elm Street and the babysitter at the start of Candyman. Characters who deal with the horror by smoking and drinking their way through the film. Both Nancy's mum loves a drink, and indeed... Helen, the heroine in
Candyman.
She's often found with a beer and a fag.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
The villain bursting through a mirror.
Yes, that happens in both.
Yep. Interesting bedroom decorations. Both of our leads sleep with a crucifix above their bed.
And I think Nancy, I noticed on her wall, she's got like something, a middle finger stuck to the wall, just like a little hand with the middle finger sticking up, which I thought, I've never seen that before.
You could, I've seen them before. You can buy them, like the whole...
Filth.
Yeah.
Doctors not believing our heroes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And then sort of getting gaslit, kind of, like no one really believing them, but the villain sort of keep pushing them.
Mm. Any more? I got a couple.
No.
I'm saving my best till last. This isn't my best, but I'm very proud of this one. Killers that live in and get their power from other people's dreams and fears. Freddy quite literally and the Candyman figuratively when he actually says it's a blessed state to live in other people's dreams but not be.
Mm.
And the icing on the proverbial cake. Get ready. I'm excited about this one. The Raimi siblings. The film that Nancy is watching to stay awake in A Nightmare on Elm Street is The Evil Dead, directed by Sam Raimi, and Billy at the start of Candyman is played by his brother, Ted Raimi.
Excellent. Very, very good.
Thank you. Thank you. Very proud of that. So, any more?
No, maybe my concluding one as I pick them is both these movies have blood on their hands.
Hand. Well, hands. Yeah. I mean, it works. It works. Well, sorry, Chris, that was yours. I'm not meant to critique that because you picked them, so that is your connection. Right. We were getting on so well when Vicky was away.
Is that true? I nearly sent you a message. I bet you two are fucking best friends now.
We had a really lovely time, but there were moments on the shows where we desperately needed you, where we were so far out of our depth. And we did. I called out to you a couple of times and you weren't there to answer my calls.
Oh, that's cheering.
As far as we're concerned, on the True Romance show, Patricia Arquette is a well-rounded and well-written character.
But we did read out your thoughts about her as well, so we covered all our bases.
Yeah. The Wicker Man remake is completely without misogyny. So welcome to the party. Right then. Chris, you gave me Nightmare on Elm Street. Vicky got Candyman. We do it chronologically. So I'm going to start with A Nightmare on Elm Street. Allow me to take you on a journey. After a group of friends, including the super resourceful Nancy, start all having the same nightmare about a fedora-wearing killer with knives for fingers, they first try and brush it off. They're just bad dreams. Turns out they're not your everyday naked in front of your family and friends kind of bad dream, though. And if the killer murders you in your sleep, you die in the real world too. They turn to their parents, who after much prodding reveal that the killer is a very bad child murderer, is there any other kind, called Fred Krueger, who they burnt to death. Not a whole lot of help, as all Nancy's friends are dead by this point, so she goes full MacGyver to catch Freddy, which she does. At which point, I look forward to discussing exactly what the ending means with you, because at this point I don't have a fucking clue, although apparently Freddy is a car. For your consideration, A Nightmare on Elm Street.
No one knows where it came from or who it will visit next.
Nancy? There's something wrong with you. You're imagining things.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Do you believe in the boogeyman?
No.
Whatever you do, don't fall asleep.
No! No!
She's the only one who can stop it. If she fails...
I'm your boyfriend now, Nancy.
No one will survive.
Help me, please! Where are you?
Nightmare on Elm Street.
So I think of all the movies that we discuss, and I know we and ah about this section where we talk about our individual histories with this movie, this is one you have to do it for. Let me start with you, Christopher. What are your memories of watching A Nightmare on Elm Street?
Well, as I've said, I was a real little scaredy pants when I was a kid. I didn't watch any horror, which is ironic because horror is my genre now that I love the most. But so I waited till I was about 15 to start watching horror films, really. And one summer, I remember... watching all the Nightmare on Elm Street films in the space of about a week, and I loved them even when they were terrible and with the, you know, the jokes and Dopey Freddy. I enjoyed them, but yeah, this one was, it was, I'm glad I waited that long because I think it would have messed me up if I'd watched this when I was younger, and I'm guessing that might have happened to both of you.
So at 15, you were kind of okay with it by that point. It didn't...
Oh, no, I still thought it was scary.
Right.
But, yeah, it wasn't... I think if I'd watched it if I was any younger, I don't think I would have survived.
Victoria?
I avoided it because, obviously, it did the rounds in the playground and it sounded really, really scary. And so I didn't watch it. And then I was babysitting. I wasn't by myself. It was me and my friend were babysitting and we put it on and we had to turn it off because I was too scared. So I was probably about 14 or 15.
You were running the risk of actually becoming a horror cliche yourself.
Yeah,
wow.
It was too much. And what I fixated on instead from that memory is the house that we were babysitting on. In order to make the television work, you put 50p in it.
Wow.
Perfect. Yeah. Wow. I heard a Theroux on the radio the other day interviewing someone about a telly light, and he just couldn't believe that was a thing. And I was like, it is a thing. I was there.
And how far did you get into it before you turned it off?
So Tina's death just scared the shit out of me and scared the shit out of me again. So it wasn't much past that because it's the set pieces that are just so, so, so scary. The rest of it, I didn't find that scary.
Okay.
So about halfway, where would that put us? Like after Rod dies, I think.
Right, yeah. Tina's death's about 11 minutes in.
Yeah. It's not halfway.
So mine are, I did the thing that neither of you did, which is age about, I don't know, 9 years old.
Excellent.
I watched this movie. And not only that, I had one of the scariest nights of my childhood because I did a double bill of films with my friend, and it started with A Nightmare on Elm Street and it finished with the Stephen King TV movie version of It.
Ooh.
So I watched Nightmare on Elm Street and It on the same night. Obviously, It stars Tim Curry. We complete our obligatory Tim Curry reference for this week. So I just remember, and I still think about this, what a cruel conceit this movie is, because when you watch scary movies as a kid, which I did a lot, the saving grace was you went, I'll go to sleep and I'll wake up and it'll all be over. The morning will come. And this is obviously, no. When you go to sleep, you die. And I think the only thing that actually got me to sleep that first night was like being confused about who I should be more scared of, Pennywise or Freddy Krueger. And eventually the confusion tired me out and I got to sleep. But this movie screwed me up a lot. It was a horrible, horrible experience. For weeks, I struggled with sleeping after watching this.
Confirms I did the right thing.
That's right.
Yeah.
Self-preservation.
Although I'm still chasing those scares now. Like that, this is sort of my go-to. You know when you go, I want to watch a horror movie and I want to be scared, and it's so rare that you're scared. We talked about The Host recently, which is one of the few movies I've seen recently that that I was like, actually, that's fucking scary.
Yeah, and I was a little bit upset watching it this week for the podcast, and I wasn't frightened at all when I watched it this time.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's because I was, you know, concentrating on my notes and thinking about what I wanted to say, or it's just worn off, or I've watched a lot of horror in the last 15 years, a lot, and I wonder if I've just completely desensitized now to some of this early stuff.
And I think the things that scare you as a kid are the boogeyman, because you aren't able to go, well, that's a bit silly, because you do think, actually, that could be your fertile mind. Right then, here's a little bit of trivia, and I say a little bit, there's actually quite a lot to get through, so let me crack on. This was Wes Craven, legendary horror director. He'd already directed The Last House on the Left at this point in the world of horror in 1972, and The Hills Have Eyes. And he wanted to sort of get a bit further in film, and he moved to New York, and he actually got some help from a friend of his, a guy called Sean Cunningham, who'd go on to direct Friday the 13th, who wanted Wes Craven to write a scary movie. And he didn't want to at that point. He wanted to be a serious filmmaker. He said, I'd got some work after Last House on the Left and The Hills Have Eyes, doing TV movie of the week work. I did Swamp Thing, didn't make much money. And after that, I couldn't get any work. He had no paycheck for 3 years. He says, my first marriage had failed. I was smoking a lot of grass, then graduated to cocaine. Finally, I walked away from the drugs and I had this one idea for Nightmare on Elm Street. So I set off to write the script. His inspiration came from a couple of places. The first one, and I did a little more digging than possibly necessary on this, and I know you're going to love this, Victoria, because it sounds like exactly the sort of thing that would really whet your appetite. It was a series of newspaper articles in the LA Times about refugees escaping war and genocide in Southeast Asia who came to America and had horrific nightmares and then died in their sleep, and it was given a name, which at the time was Asian Death Syndrome. It's now known as Sudden Arrhythmic Death Syndrome, or SADS, if you're in a rush. So one study at the time focused on Hmong refugees from Laos, and it concluded, this is a medical journal, concluded that the individuals who died were killed by their own beliefs in the spiritual world, otherwise known as nocturnal pressing spirit attacks. Now, these Hmong refugees believe that once these nightmare visions begin, a shaman has to come and give them psychic protection from the spirits in their sleep. But because they were refugees in America, scattered over 53 different cities, there wasn't enough shamans to visit all of them, and that's why they ended up dying from these evil spirits.
Really interesting.
Mm. So Craven said he'd read an article about this. It was in his instance, it was a family who'd escaped the killing fields in Cambodia. They were fine. And then suddenly the young son was having very disturbing nightmares. He told his parents he was afraid that if he slept, the thing chasing him would get him. So he tried to stay awake for days at a time. And when he finally fell asleep, his parents thought the crisis was over. Then they heard screams in the middle of the night. And by the time they got to him, he was dead. He died in the middle of a nightmare. And that became the central line of Nightmare on Elm Street.
Flipping heck.
Yeah. On a lighter note, he was also inspired by the Gary Wright 70s pop song, Dreamweaver. As a way of changing the tone, let's have a listen.
I love that song.
So I was like, what on earth? But apparently the whole song is based on this idea of the mind weaving dreams at night. And in fact, it's the opening bars, which I'll play you, which will get you a better understanding of at least where he came up with the tone of the soundtrack for it. This is the start of the same song. Before we get into Dreamweaver. Oh, beautiful voice. I was waiting for one of you to say, but I'll say it. Beautiful voice, Alex. Thank you. So, that is the genesis of A Nightmare on Elm Street. Chris, you said that you might have a little bit that you want to add to this theory of where the idea came up from. So tell me.
Yeah, I mean, some of it is what you've just said, but maybe put a little more succinctly.
Mm. He can't help himself, can he?
What is this, guys? Hey,
I thought it was fascinating. You know, because it's a Halloween countdown special, I thought I'd really take us to as scary a place as we can on this podcast.
Not good enough.
Right.
Well, about 6 years ago, Robert Englund was over publicising some terrible horror film he was in. And I met up with him and asked him to record something for me. I did a feature on Nightmare on Elm Street trivia. And so this is him explaining where the idea of Nightmare on Elm Street came from.
The point is that everyone has a bad dream once in a while. It's no biggie.
Freddy Krueger here, a.k.a. Robert Englund, the man who played Freddy Krueger. And the following are 10 things you probably didn't know about Nightmare on Elm Street. Child killer Freddy was inspired by an old man who was hanging around outside writer-director Wes Craven's house one night when he was a child. The man stood there staring up at the house, scared the bejesus out of young Wes, and planted the seed that would eventually become the nightmare. The story of a man who kills in his dreams was also inspired by a series of unconnected Los Angeles Times articles in the 1970s about East Asian refugees inexplicably dying during nightmares.
There you go. That's from the horse's mouth.
Yeah, right.
He was brilliant, by the way. Like, he can just go into Freddy like that, and he seems to love doing it as well.
Yeah.
You meet some of these guys who are a bit over it, but he was a blast.
I nearly started crying then.
Imagine me, I'm sitting there and I've written this script, not sure if he's even going to say yes to doing it.
Yeah.
And then he just goes into it, and it was, that was quite exciting. What the other thing I'll say is that on one of the documentaries, Wes Craven also talks about the idea of nightmares. He said that when he was 4 years old and his parents were breaking up, he had terrible nightmares and he asked his mum to protect him. And she said, sorry, that's the one place I can't go and protect you.
Jesus, Mum! Just say yes!
You have to go there alone.
That is not what you say to four-year-olds.
No wonder he was traumatised.
Look, I'll do anything for you. I'll make you a nice cake, and when you're asleep, I will
We established it's not a nice cake.
He doesn't think that.
What are you dreaming about, baby? It's horrible cake chasing me. It's rock
so
hard.
Heavy. Why, Mummy? Why can't you just go to Marks and Spencer's like everybody else?
Wes Craven then writes his script, and every studio passes on it. Paramount passed on it. They said it was too much like the Dennis Quaid movie Dreamscape. Have either of you seen Dreamscape?
I don't think so.
That scared the shit out of me when I was a kid. The snake man in that is horrible.
I've not seen many films where the effects have dated that dramatically, though.
Yeah. Disney were the only ones who were interested in it, but they wanted somehow to make it more preteen friendly, which I have no idea how they plan to do. But this is where Wes Craven meets a guy called Bob Shea, who has created New Line Cinema, a New Line Cinema we're all very familiar with. And he, Craven describes Bob Shea as one of the most remarkable men I've ever met. This is a 2014 interview. And the director of A Nightmare on Elm Street 2, actually, Jack Sholder, says he was the first guy to distribute John Waters, distribute Werner Herzog. He always felt like an outsider, and that drove him. He's kind of like Harvey Weinstein, except that Harvey is a gargoyle. And Bob Shea basically goes, let's do this. Let's make this movie. And they do. And to move into the casting realm of things, David Warner was initially going to be Freddy Krueger, to the point that they did makeup tests, which you can see online, which are very scary. Looks different, obviously, but still scary. He had to drop out due to scheduling conflicts. And then Wes Craven was sort of like, he was a bit up in the air about how to replace David Warner. He wasn't sure if he wanted a big guy, small guy. They were struggling to cast Freddy. And then Robert Englund comes in to do an audition. And in his own words, Robert Englund said, I was on the cusp, or thought I was on the cusp, of celebrity. The result of starring as an adorable curly-haired alien in the miniseries V on NBC. The only audition that I got that would fit into my schedule was Nightmare on Elm Street, and that's the reason I said yes.
Wes said that when he came in, he was full of piss and vinegar, and that's why he got the role.
Yeah, he says he was struggling to find someone with a sense of ferocity I was seeking. Everyone was too quiet, too compassionate towards children. Then Robert Englund auditioned. he does say he wasn't as tall as I'd hoped, and he had baby fat on his face, but he impressed me with his willingness to go to the dark places. In his mind, Robert understood Freddy. Apparently, he'd rubbed cigarette ash from his car ashtray under his eyes before he walked in, which he says is an old theatre trick, which gave him quite the scary appearance. He also credits his agent at the time, Joe Rice, with helping him get the audition right. He said that he told him to act rat-like and weasel-like, adding that when we read about abusers and molesters in the newspaper, they're not big hulking men, but weasels. Go and play it like that. And it worked. In terms of the makeup that we all know and love, Robert Englund says it took 3.5 hours each morning. It was uncomfortable, hot and itchy. I remember seeing some of the teenagers waltz onto the set one day, enjoying their youth and beauty. And I thought, wait a minute, I need to channel this jealousy into Freddy. But he also credits the films, not just Freddy. He's very nice about it. He says, look, Freddy's a huge part of it, but these films are absolutely incredible. They're about a strong girl surviving Freddy. She'll realise her inner strength and beat this symbol of patriarchy. Nancy in the first movie was basically Aliens Ripley for teenagers. Any other bits and pieces on Robert Englund? I can see your friends.
They couldn't get the look right, and the guy who designed the makeup in the end, because it's funny, this ironically became his nickname, but he was out eating a pepperoni pizza and saw Freddy's face basically in the pizza and brought it home and designed the burn makeup to look like the top of a pepperoni pizza. So, yeah, that's why he's called Pizza Face.
He says he stole the fact that Freddy stands with his legs far apart from James Cagney, a pose that signifies sheer power. And people wonder why Freddy has a strange posture with his right shoulder slouched. It was because the claw was so heavy it weighed me down. But I like the way it looked, make me look like a cowboy drawing a gun. The other really noteworthy thing about casting is this is our introduction to Johnny Depp. In so much as it actually says in the titles, introducing Johnny Depp, which is kind of weird.
It is weird. Yeah, it's a bit off that, isn't it?
Why is it off?
Well, because you don't normally get that from a grown-up. That normally happens with little children. They'd have an introducing credit.
Yeah, well, unless you've got a brilliant agent. And then that's just the stipulation, isn't it? That you are a big deal or you're going to be a big deal.
So. Well, he wasn't initially getting the role. There was more of a guy that was more of a surfer dude who Wes Craven was going to cast, and his daughter and one of her friends was looking through the pictures and they saw the picture of Johnny Depp and said, "That's the guy. That's the guy. He's so sexy, Dad."
Yeah, he says, "I showed it to my 14-year-old daughter and her friend because I'd met Johnny and he was in a band and he said he's interested in getting into movies. His fingers were yellow from constantly smoking unfiltered cigarettes. He was greasy and pale and sickly. But like you say," his daughter went, "he's beautiful. Pick him." And so he went with him. Charlie Sheen was initially cast in the role that Johnny Depp has, though. But he asked for too much money, or his agent did. They wanted double his rate, which he was asking for about $3,000 a week. Sheen himself says this isn't true. He says, "I didn't price myself out of it because I didn't get greedy until years later."
A surprising thing to me, like looking back at this film, on one of the makings of, they talk about the fact that they got the money, then they lost the money, then they were maxing out their credit cards to make it. But how they got financing finally was because of John Saxon being in it. They needed a name, and apparently John Saxon was a big enough name to get them funding. Now, John Saxon is an actor I really think about much these days. I wouldn't have thought he was the guy, but he'd been in Enter the Dragon. He'd done some relatively successful dramas.
That's it!
Yeah.
Do you know, I spent the movie going, "Oh, come on, come on, come on." Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
So that's why this film got made, is Nancy's dad.
Yeah. Aside from that... Robert Englund says of Johnny Depp, "He was the most polite young actor I've ever worked with. He called me sir for the first week." Any more about the backstory to this wondrous piece of horror?
All good.
No? All right, then. Let's go through the movie. So, we meet... I don't remember the start very well, to be perfectly honest. I haven't seen this movie since I was terrified as a preteen. And I certainly don't remember seeing Freddy making his glove at the start, which was nice. Nope. That was all new to me. And then we meet Nancy, who is our final girl and clearly going to be our final girl. Do you like Nancy?
Yeah, she's all right. I think she's a bit wishy-washy.
What?
Well, I don't know.
I think she's great.
I think she livens up quite a lot of stuff that is actually dull, but it comes later on. So she's got a lot to do and she handles that very well.
I also think she's given some slightly rough dialogue and I'm not sure she's the best actress in the film. And therefore, I think that combination makes her not one of my favourite characters in horror. But I think the strange thing about watching the film now with different eyes is that we actually meet Tina at the beginning in Tina's dream.
Mm.
And they set her up as the protagonist and the hero.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting. I'd kind of forgotten that it's, you know, when she gets killed, it's a little bit of a surprise, really.
I guess so, yeah. I forgot. I was more preoccupied with the fact that one of the few jump scares that you see in horror cinema a lot, which it does here and it does well, is a sheep. There's a sheep jump scare in Tina's dream at the start. It's like,
oh, yeah.
She turns around and there's a sheep like knocking shit over. Go, "Oi!" And she's like, "Ugh!" And it just sort of holds on the sheep. I'm like, all right, that's good. She's scary sheep. I like that.
Well, it's a dream visual, isn't it? A sheep.
Is it?
Counting sheep.
Counting sheep.
I know counting sheep, but once you've counted them, they sort of bow out. They don't tend
to... bow out.
Oh, no. Oh. And then we understand just how scary skipping is in this movie. Never has skipping been more terrifying than when... did you skip as a child, Vicky?
I did.
Yeah?
I skipped frequently.
Did you have a rhyme?
We probably did. It didn't have anything to do with paedophiles, I hope.
Not a paedophile. He's not a paedophile. You were all clear on that. Freddie is not a paedophile. He was changed. Initially... He was written by Wes Craven as a child molester, but there was a spate of paedophile attacks in California at the time he was working on the movie. And he was like, I don't want to seem like I'm piggybacking that real life story. Southeast Asian refugees dying in their sleep. He's happy to piggyback that story.
Have that.
But child molestation, he was like, I don't want that. So he's never called it in the movie. It's alluded to, obviously.
Yeah.
But he's called a child murderer.
And they certainly call him that when they're talking about the character, everyone involved with the film. And I wonder if it's spoken about more in the sequels as well.
Well, I mean, the terrible thing is obviously the 2010 remake where they go, he's definitely a paedophile. And it's, but the less said about that movie, the better. So, skipping. It's so creepy.
I wonder who wrote that in the universe of the film.
As in which staff member wrote it?
Yeah, or did the kids? Are the kids made it up?
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Or maybe the parents, after they burnt him to death, go, do you know what this needs?
It needs a song.
Just to lighten the mood.
Like, where did it come from? Because they're keeping it a secret. The kids don't know.
So, you're right. We meet Tina first, and then we got the skipping, and then we sort of meet this group of friends, Rod and Tina. And Nancy and Glenn, who's played by Johnny Depp, who dresses like he owns a boat, but I don't think he does. All chinos and sky blue shirts. And we get to know them a little bit. There's a nice little bit of character building where Johnny Depp tries to convince his parents he's not at a friend's house by playing a sound effects tape, which goes wrong, which is kind of cute. And then we get into this idea that has populated horror movies for a very long time, especially this period with slasher movies, of if you have sex, you die. To quote almost ad verbatim Randy in Scream, obviously another Wes Craven movie, there are certain rules you must abide by in order to successfully survive a horror movie. Number one, you can never have sex. Sex equals death. Okay, Tina has sex. And Glenn tries to have sex with Nancy, and she says, not now, Glenn.
She says, we're not here for us, which is so weird. And I'm obviously not going to be like, so he has every right to be angry. But even I was like, come on, Nancy. Like, your parents are away. Like, come on.
Even you are like
even
that.
I.
But morality sucks, doesn't it? Morality sucks. Nancy doesn't.
There was a really interesting article on The Atlantic about this movie, which I'd suggest sort of digging out, because they talk about how normally the final girl, it is about morality. And her virginity. And that's what keeps her alive. She doesn't have sex because she's a moral person. And, you know, she doesn't go around doing that. And that's how she survives. But their argument is that actually, like, when she sort of says no to Glenn, it's like the fact, not that she doesn't want to do it for moral reasons, is that she's more distracted with the fact that there's someone killing people.
Yeah.
There's this monster haunting her dreams. And so it's the fact that she's got a survival instinct based on being quite smart and intelligent and thinking, right, well, now's not the time for sex. We need to concentrate on other things. And not because she's like, no, get off me. I don't do that.
Yeah, that was my reading of it as well, to be fair.
Yeah. And she is super resourceful, as we'll get on to. Tina's death, then. Rod and Tina, they're going at it. Audibly, anyway, you don't see anything, just in case. You wanted to know whether you saw anything, you know. But we do see Freddy pressing through the wall.
That scared me to death.
Isn't that fantastic?
That's more scary. So all the set pieces with the gore, they still scared the shit out of me, but pressing through the ceiling above a sleeping Nancy,
it's amazing how it looks like really good CGI now.
Really good.
And it was just a piece of spandex that they bought down the road.
It's terrifying.
It's so effective, yeah, 100% agree.
I mean, largely, the practical effects in this are great.
Mm.
I mean, that one in particular, it's incredible. It really is.
It's all simple stuff, though, because in the next scene he's got long arms. That was fishing poles.
I mean, that does look quite funny.
But it is kind of, but it's also something that you would see in a dream, because some of the stuff you see in a dream is a bit crap.
Yes, agreed.
It's just off kilter, and the sparks are coming from they hooked him up to a car battery.
Poor
Robert Englund's hand. But yeah, it's all simple but effective effects, and especially like in 1984 when you weren't looking for the joins in the way we are now.
Yeah.
The visual effects guy said that actual glove, the famous Freddy glove, was a real nightmare on set because people would want to try it on. The hero glove, as it's called, the ones with the actual blades.
Yeah.
People would try it on. And your natural instinct when you try on a glove is to clench your fist. And the minute you clench your fist, you slice up your your forearm. So people just kept going, cool. we get there's another prop thing where the mask comes off his face. I mean, this is... Tina is an idiot at this point because she literally does the stupid thing, whether it's a dream or not. When someone goes, Tina, outside your window, you don't go, probably check that out. Probably go investigate whatever is making that horrible sound. I'll go and find it. And Tina's death then. So that really screwed you up, V.
Yeah, it's terrifying. It's the same feeling I have with the Exorcist spider walk, the unnatural... Mm. It isn't so much the blood and the slashing and whatever else, it's the energy and the pace that it happens, but it's, you know, her climbing up the walls and being dragged across the ceiling because that is unnatural. Mm. And it obviously your human brain just goes, no, like can't cope with that.
The room that they actually did that in, this revolving room, initially Wes Craven said to a special effects guy who pitched him this idea of like her being upside down and it's the room that's revolving. He was like, we don't have the money. And he was like, how about if we do use the same room twice for Johnny Depp's death? He was like, yeah, that'll work. So cool. It's the same room.
And then we'll select a Jamiroquai in a few years.
And then Nolan might want it for Inception a few years after that. So she's dead. Tina's dead. And then we meet Nancy in school and she falls asleep in class because she's trying to stay awake. Did you recognise the teacher, Lynn Shay, obviously?
Oh, I'm a huge Lynn Shay fan. Yeah. Robert Shay's sister.
Mm. And... big in the Insidious movies now.
Insidious movies and Kingpin, and there's something about Mary as well.
Oh yeah,
she's brilliant in both those. But did you recognise what she was teaching, Alex?
I didn't.
She's
teaching. My god, Alex, come on!
Is she teaching Hamlet?
I hate these tests.
Well, it's the same one. It's the same blooming line. Sorry, when you weren't here, Alex got annoyed.
Oh no, fine. Sorry, is this a private joke? Yeah.
Alex got annoyed with me shaming him for not knowing Something Rotten was from Hamlet.
Mm.
Oh. And so he had an opportunity straight after
to read Hamlet.
Or just to remember what we talked about last week.
Or as it worked out, as I'm sure you really thought it would work out, you shaming me all over again. I'm
genuinely shocked. I thought, what an opportunity
this
to
morning,
redeem yourself.
I was writing the connections to this, and there is a Hamlet connection just about, because I was really reaching to make up for not having been here for ages because you make me feel bad. And so there's a Hamlet thing to both of them. So there's obviously like, what is it? To sleep, perchance to dream, what sleep dreams may come. And then there's another line in Hamlet at some different point where he's talking about holding up a mirror to nature. So I was like, can I make this work? And then I thought, do you know what? I won't be like, oh, hi guys, I'm back. Anyway, Hamlet. Like, I thought that would just...
I would have loved it. I would have loved it. And Alex would have scratched his head.
I wouldn't have recognised it. I'd have been like, what's that?
Crying.
Is that from Police Academy 4, Citizens on Patrol? There's a really nice button. You love a good button on
I
a
do.
Scene, don't
Is
you?
It the hall pass
it's
button?
It's the hall pass, yeah.
It's so good.
Nancy's had that horrible dream and Freddy disguised the girl as, I need a hall pass. And then
it's fucking great.
Lynn Shay at the end goes, yeah, you should go home because you look terrified, but you will
need, you will a, need hall a hall pass.
If I'm trying to stay awake, I probably wouldn't have a warm bath with an inflatable cushion.
No.
Note to self.
Yeah.
The footage of that behind the scenes, though, with the special effects designer, Jim Doyle, holding his breath and then putting his head between her legs.
Jesus Christ.
Is incredible, with her just kind of barking him where to go, where not to go.
Well, no shit. Mind my vagina with those knives, please.
Well, apparently he was using that hero glove as well.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Because there was one that was rubber, but they were using the
They were using the blade one. Because I guess you're so close and you couldn't...
This is the thing. I got up to that point, but it ruined baths for me for a long time. Ruined a bath wank for a very many years. I'm allowed to say it, it's fine.
No, only boys are allowed to talk about that stuff.
I don't know how to react.
Look at you, you're such a baby.
It's just a sort of
a bath wank, a bank.
Didn't even do it as a joke though. Just ruined a bath wank. Ruined a bath wank. Not like ruined my bath wanks. It's the way
I'm not grandstanding.
No,
I'm
you're
stating
not.
A fact.
No, yeah, that's fine. Weirdly, it did the same for me.
You're just joining in.
No, but you remember I was telling you, and don't roll your eyes at me, Chris. Remember I was telling you about how I got scared of bubbles in the bath
yes.
Because of sharks? All right, you do it then, Victoria.
It's just your cock.
No, but this is where it came from. The idea of not being able to see the bottom of the bath and it opening up into this big pit of death.
Yes.
This is where it came from. I replaced Freddy Krueger with sharks, but it's the same thing.
It is the same thing. Sorry. Sorry, Alex.
It's all right.
Should we take a break?
Good to have you back. Yeah, I think we should. Yeah. Yeah, I'm just going for a little walk. Back in a sec.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking, like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Join me, Melissa Reddy, and listen to my brand new podcast, Between the Lines. I'll be speaking to the biggest names in football about the captivating, behind-the-scenes stories fans want to hear. From major talking points to untold anecdotes, you'll hear from some of football's leading stars as well as those working in the shadows. In our first episode, I spoke to former Spurs manager Maurizio Pochettino about that Amazon documentary.
We feel responsible because it was very difficult to say yes to open the door to Amazon. Only we watch with Jesus the 25 minutes first, because it was until we left the club.
And on our latest episode, I investigate how prevalent and damaging social media abuse is in football.
And I was like taking all this negativity onto myself, and I did. I kind of lost myself and my personality because I knew everything that was going on around it. And it's not until I actually got to a stage where I thought, I can't take this anymore. It is becoming too much for me, that I spoke out about it.
Craving football insight? Well, look no further. Listen to Between the Lines with me, Melissa Reddy, via Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
This was a Stakhanov production.
I feel loads better now. Just calm down outside. Everything's good. Do you know what? We're into Nancy becoming really, really good and proactive. She decides to go into her dream and sort of find out a little bit more about Freddie. So she positions Glenn to stand next to her, stay awake next to her as a sentry as she goes to investigate this Freddie character. And she goes off to see Rod. I think she's seen Rod at this point.
She sort of likes Rod, but Rod is such a dick. Like, he's such a dick.
He pulls that knife really quickly on Glenn early in the film.
A flick knife to a sleepover. Rod, can you fuck off home, please?
I mean, I was really annoyed with that when I was watching it this time, but then I realised it's so they're setting him up so he seemed like he would be a suspect in a murder.
He very much does seem like the suspect in a murder. Nancy tries to help him. He's like, what did you just say to me? And, like, tries to kill her.
Yeah, it is quite... I mean, it's 0-60 in seconds. I mean, he does sort of go, hey, don't talk to me. I've got a fucking knife! He doesn't mess about. Jesu Garcia, who plays him, the scene where Nancy visits him in jail, he talks about this. He said, I was 19 and my life was horrible. I'd finished being homeless and I had a feeling of emptiness, so I'd do drugs. On the set of Nightmare, I snorted heroin in the bathroom. I've never talked about this, but I was high in the scene when I was talking to Heather, who plays Nancy, through the bars in the jail cell.
Wow. That's his best scene. That's really dark. He's good in that.
So, funnily enough, you're not the only person who thinks that. Heather Langenkamp, who plays Nancy, said, on the day we shot that scene in the jail, his eyes were watery and they weren't focused. I thought, wow,
yeah.
He's giving the best performance of his life.
Well, that's upsetting.
Freddie turns up and we get another great moment, which again relates to the dreams, because Glenn, like a bastard, falls asleep and Nancy's sort of running away from Freddie and runs up the stairs and the stairs...
I remembered that bit as well. And then I'm really frightened of a deep shag pile carpet. Because it could turn to foam.
Ruins a carpet wank.
There's some debate. Bob Shay directed that actual sequence, and there's some debate over what they used, but they came to the conclusion that it was probably oatmeal stairs that she was stepping in.
That's horrible.
She says herself it's mushroom soup.
They've all disagreed on it. None of them could actually remember.
I was going down my stairs the other day, and I stood on a slug, because we'd been clearing out the garden, just a little bit of detail, and it exploded under my foot. How awful is that? Is that not the worst thing you've ever heard in your life?
That's bad.
I mean, talk us through the sensation.
It was like a blister, like standing on a blister.
Okay.
Gross.
You've also just had Freddie walking through the prison bars, which was Wes Craven says, I did that before Terminator 2.
Oh, that's it.
Got there first.
Oh, yeah. So at this point, we've met her dad as well, who is the chief of police in town. You can tell he's a good policeman because when they go to see Rod, because she believes he's in danger and he's going to hang himself, or Freddie's going to hang him, she walks in and she can't believe her dad's there. And his reasoning for being there, he goes, there's an unsolved murder. And I don't like unsolved murders.
No, he's one of those policemen.
Solved murders are great. Huge fan of a solved murder, but this unsolved thing really gets to me. And Rod, as it turns out, dies, and then we get the most inappropriate vicar in the world.
I thought that! So he's like, ashes to ashes, live by the sword, die by the sword. Yeah. They don't say that at funerals.
Well, they don't say, but especially because they go, he carried a knife?
Yeah.
I got something for that. In fact, the Bible has something for that.
I think it's pretty much a standard text. Like, I was really surprised.
Also, Nancy's wearing a very bright blue dress to a funeral.
Oh, I thought that was okay. I was all right with that. Like, you don't have to wear black, but you do have to respect the person that's passed, and being like, well, live by the sword, die by the sword, is a bit harsh.
Yeah, he asked for it. What? He was asking for it. Beg your pardon?
He's like 17.
That's my son in there. Yeah. Live by the sword, die by the sword. Yeah. Moving
we'll be a rebel, see where it gets you.
Yeah. And then we get the sleep doctor, because the dreams, they're terrible for old Nancy. So her mum, loves a drink, decides to go to take her to a sleep doctor.
Yeah.
Who is played by Charles Fleischer, who also voiced Roger Rabbit, which I found out for the first time reading about this, which is kind of cool. He's not much of a doctor because...
it's so boring, isn't it? He's like, look at this screen and then the thing will happen. Yeah. I was like, 20 minutes of this. Yeah,
so bad numbers, anything... Wait, I've got this. Bad numbers are anything up to five. Let's say five. Nancy's mum, 5. So if it goes above 5 on the screen,
it's so boring.
This bad.
It's clearly got to be, if this light goes off, it's bad, and then that's it. Have I ever told you, my mum once threatened to send me to a sleep clinic.
Why?
So, because of my dreams. Let me think this through. Let me just, my brain catch up with my mouth. Right, okay. So.
This is a first.
Yeah. I didn't know we could do that. I didn't know we could press that button.
Yeah. I don't normally like silence, and so I don't. So this is another reason I avoided this film, because it was about dreams. And when I was younger anyway, I had eczema. And if I got very emotional, if I got very stressed or very excited or all your usual basic emotions, I would get a rash like on my face or just anywhere. But it was really vivid and really sore, and then it would just go away. And that's fine. That's not the end of the world. But then it started happening when I was asleep. So the dreams I were having were too intense. So I would wake up and it was really scary for my parents, because I would wake up and I would just have these like massive marks on me, and I was fine, but I would remember the dream, but I was only little, and so my mum was like, we can't, you know, there must be something we can do to like tone it down a bit when you're asleep, so maybe we'll think about sending you to a sleep clinic. And then nothing, she sent me to yoga instead, actually, which is quite nice. And then I just got a bit older and it stopped, I think. So yeah, I have, and there's nothing more boring than other people's dreams, obviously, but I have very, very vivid dreams.
It's nice to put that to the test, though.
That's the thing. That's a story about dreams, and that's boring. I understand. That's why you don't know this fact about me. And I would have told you sooner, but it hasn't come up.
Or tell it to us in the pub rather than on the.
Sorry, fine, I'm just a bit out of practice.
My biggest, my nightmare that I had, I read When the Wind Blows when I was a kid. You know, the Raymond Briggs thing, and I became absolutely obsessed with the idea of a nuclear bomb going off and just like and being wiped out, and sort of seeing mushroom clouds on the horizon.
Yeah,
horrendous. Mm.
Now, as a doctor, you'd sort of expect him, the sleep doctor, to just know a bit about his subject, or at least have a stock answer. Mm-hmm. And so when Nancy's mum, quite rightly, goes, so what are dreams? He goes, mysteries. Cool. And then he goes, incredible body hocus pocus.
That's such a shit.
Then he sort of comes clean after wasting a time. Goes, we don't know what they are. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I should have just said we've no idea. But these numbers represent something. Yeah. So let's look at them. It's really cool though, where she brings his hat back. Love that. Love the fact that he brings the hat back. And then we get a little bit about another aspect. Wes Craven says he was influenced by Eastern mysticism. Partly in terms of making this movie, and we do get a little bit of a monologue from Johnny Depp on a bridge going, the Balinese way of dreaming is a dream where you control your actions. Have you ever had a dream where you actually are in control? It is the most amazing thing.
Have.
It's like being in virtual reality.
Yeah.
Because you are sort of, you're aware it's a dream, and you're walking around and you're doing shit and you're going, I can do this because I'm in a dream.
It's brilliant. But it's only happened to me, it's definitely happened once, it might have happened twice, and that's in my whole life.
Mm. Yeah, about the same for me, but I distinctly remember going, that was absolutely amazing.
It was perfect. Mm.
You're looking at me like you've never had that, Chris.
I've had the night terrors where you're paralysed.
Yeah, me too.
That's happened to me. That tends to happen to me when I'm like overtired, come back from a festival or something, and my brain's not quite right. And it's often tied in with my recurring nightmare, which is a snake in the corner of the room. And if I know if I look at it, it's going to attack me. And so I'm trying not to look at it. And then eventually I look at it and it comes at me and I wake up.
It's a succubus.
And I think maybe some of the imagery from that has come from one of the Nightmare on Elm Street films as well.
Yeah.
When Freddy's a snake. Anyway, I wish I'd not thought about it. I'm scared.
Does Johnny Depp, let's just sort of turn right from here. Nancy is like tooling up and learning how to protect herself, and she's got this leaflet about how to make your own personal protection devices.
It's a book called Booby Traps and Improvised Anti-Personnel Devices.
Why? So, but isn't it personal, not personnel? That really threw me, because isn't personnel like a group of people? Do you see what I'm saying? I would have read that as this is boring. Don't worry about it.
It's booby traps. It's booby trap book.
But then Johnny Depp goes, oh, personnel. It's like, Johnny Depp, you fucking idiot. It's personal. But now you've just said it.
I've written down personnel.
So are you an idiot or am I wrong?
Anti-people. Anti-personnel devices.
Classically, they are called anti-personnel devices.
Are they really?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd say I believe you, but I don't believe you. That's interesting.
I've written it down.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean anything to me. Okay, well, Alex
says it. It's the same book that Kevin McAllister read, isn't it?
Oh, really?
I don't know. I'm making that up.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I believe that.
He's home alone in his house.
Shall we go back to Bathwanks? Great. At this point, we finally find out who the bloody hell Fred Krueger is after Nancy has had enough of her mother just like brushing her off. And it is possibly, I'm not going to say it's my favourite scene because we haven't got to that bit. It is one of my favourite scenes in the movie when Nancy comes in and goes, "Mother!" And she just appears like, literally, she sort of stumbles into shot in her dressing gown with the vodka tucked under her arm like a baby and like lights a cigarette and goes, "Hello." "Hello." And then she's like, "I want to know what's going on." She's like, "Not to the basement." "I'll tell you."
But I like this. In this sort of 20-minute period, although I don't like some of the melodrama between those two characters, it's interesting watching Nancy become the mum and the mum become the child.
Yes.
To the point that before Nancy takes on Fred Krueger, she literally tucks her mum up in bed.
Yeah.
The parents have let them the teenagers down. And it's time, as you said, Nancy's the smart one. This is why she survived. It's up for her to step up and pay for the sins of the parents. So I do like the way their roles reverse in these scenes.
Yeah. I do like Johnny Depp's parents in this as well. Although his dad seems, Johnny Depp seems like quite a sort of like he comes from a white collar family, but his dad seems really blue collar. Like there's a sort of a strange matchup there, which I never quite understood. But he's about to die, Glenn. Another bit of a script issue I have here is that you do not tell your mum when she walks into the bedroom and you've got your TV on your lap that you're about to watch Miss Nude America. You go, watching a documentary about seals.
Oh, I thought it was quite funny. But then Wes calls this the Romeo and Juliet moment in the film where Nancy's phoned up Glenn to save his life and Glenn's parents don't pass the message on. So they're sort of star-crossed lovers. But just, we were talking about the mum explaining who Fred Krueger was. Why has she kept Fred Krueger's
fucking dog
knives?
That's so bad.
Why has she kept his glove?
Yeah.
Serial killers keep a trophy from these scenes of these crimes, but don't take this child killer's weapon and keep it.
And presume if you want to evade justice for your vigilante activities, you don't take any evidence.
Just that makes no sense to me at all.
I wonder how she got it as well. I can't imagine sort of after they've burnt his...
she went back in.
Burnt him down. She's gone back in. And were there other people there just checking he was dead? She's like, "Dibs on the glove. Does anyone else want it? Because I want
everyone
it."
Everyone was like, "Fuck no, I don't want that. He's been killing children with it."
His hand is still in it.
You're disgusting.
But she does... Yeah, that is quite weird that she keeps the glove.
Yeah.
Which then sort of doesn't really come into play ever again, like because Nancy goes back for it and it's vanished at that point.
Yeah, well, I to be honest, I thought, oh, this is going to come back. This is how she's going to kill Freddy Krueger with his own... weapon, but no, we got a much more underwhelming finale than that.
Yeah. So Johnny Depp's busy watching Miss Nude America, but he's listening to records at the same time, and his mum goes, how are you gonna hear what she's gonna say? And he goes, who cares what she says? And the fact that he's watching Miss Nude America, it does kind of tie into this morality thing as well. He's doing something a little bit naughty, and so his death is imminent. Another unintentionally hilarious moment is where Nancy's mum goes, right, now you've got to get some sleep. Get some sleep. And so she takes all...
I know what you're going to say.
She takes all the coffee cups and all her Pro Plus out of the room and she leaves and she closes the door. And then out of nowhere, Nancy produces an entire coffee percolator.
A whole pot of coffee.
And the machine that goes
presumably,
in.
Yeah, that she's got to have had plugged in. It's so comedy. It's ridiculous.
But that's completely inspired by these Asian East Asian stories that inspired Wes Craven, that the kid... whose story properly inspired this, they found a full coffee thing in his cupboard that he had plugged
so
in and it was hidden in the wardrobe or the cupboard.
Jeez.
Oh, that's really sad.
So it's actually it's out of tragedy, so maybe don't laugh so much.
Well, yeah, no, I understand. I just think it could have been directed a little less like a Zucker Brothers moment.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like a scene from Airplane. You've taken my coffee. Well, lucky I've got another
whole pot of coffee.
We're starting to sort of go into like an interesting area now where Freddy seems to be able to interact with the real world. First, we get Phone Mouth.
Yes, Phone Tongue.
Yeah, he gives her a little lick. And then we get into Glenn's death, which I'm embarrassed to say, and I've known it for a while, but for a long time, I used to think about that scene and go, I wonder how they did that. I've got no idea how they did that.
That's
incredible.
Not embarrassing.
All right. And then I just, once you sort of go, they just put the bed on the ceiling and the room's upside down and then they just poured the blood through it.
Oh, yeah.
You sort of go.
So effective, though.
It's amazing.
And Wes Craven, he said, I'd simply seen The Shining recently and thought, I want to do that.
Yeah.
But it works. It's an incredible moment. A slightly undercut when the paramedics arrive and one of the cops goes, you don't need a stretcher up there, you need a mop.
I mean, it's just...
Well, no, they really play on it, though, don't they? They say the coroner is puking in the bathroom.
Yep.
I think the dad sees one of the policemen putting a bucket on the floor to catch bits of
his son. Yeah.
I mean, it's played for black comedy, that.
Yeah, but the dad rescues it, I think, because he looks as absolutely devastated as you would.
Yeah.
And he isn't like, oh, what's that? Like, he looks gutted. Oh, that's a bad choice of words. But anyway. He looks very upset.
It's a horrible death as well. It's just, this movie for me ruined beds and baths almost entirely. Both of them, suddenly you sort of go, I'm in two of the safest places I could be.
Those are two of the best things.
Yeah. So you lost beds and baths and you lost baths and wanks.
Bath wanks, not all wanks. Come on.
So then...
Home Alone.
Yeah, we get the Home Alone moment. Well, Nancy's mum is busy hiding booze in the towels. I love her.
I thought her life's not that much of a mess because she's got loads of towels. Come round to my house. We've all got one towel each. That's it.
Have you really only got one each?
Yeah, we do. They're really good, but we've only got one each.
I actually think that's great. I have so many towels that I never use.
Really?
Yeah, I've got an excess. I'm a bit of a hoarder, though.
If you want to get me something for Christmas, get me nice towels because I'll never...
Oh, so you want more towels?
I don't want your towels.
And the timings are a bit off here because Nancy reckons she's going to get to sleep and be back up and want Glenn outside in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
But
and then Home Alone's her whole house.
And then literally builds traps for about 20 minutes. Glenn turns up and goes, do you want me? She goes, no, you go have a nap and then dies. Yeah. That doesn't happen. But yeah, she fully Home Alone's it. It's great. And then we need to talk about the end of this film because this is the point where everything goes a bit weird. So, Freddy is dragged by Nancy into the real world. So, in theory, he shouldn't still have the powers that he has in the dream world.
Yep.
And yet he does because he's burnt and climbs up the stairs while on fire and gets into Nancy's mum's bed.
Mm.
And then Nancy runs in with her dad and they find that her mum is this skeleton under the covers and then she's sucked down into this glowing vortex. And her dad sort of goes, yeah, well, that's that then.
Didn't like her anyway. Yeah, I don't know if you know, but we split up.
He
so.
Is so sort of like, all right, fine.
Suppose you have to live with me now.
But yeah, and then we get the actual ending, which is Nancy sort of wakes up. She basically turns her back on Freddy, which is another interesting thing that I read in this article. Because normally, like the final girl becomes quite masculinized at the end of a movie. She ends up using a rather phallic weapon to off the killer. And in this, she just turns her back on him and just goes, you're shit.
Gives him the cold shoulder, like many women have done to me.
Yes.
Were you dressed like that?
Because.
But yeah, so the idea is that she no longer believes in him or she, you know, he's nothing to her.
Mm-hmm.
And that destroys him, which is, it's just a little bit underwhelming, isn't it? When you've, you know, this film has taken place in the dream world and it's been so fantastical. I don't know, you're primed for something a bit more.
It's very cool where he vanishes, though, where he lunges and then just gone. I think that's really cool. Mm-hmm. It's the bit after that that's there's a little bit of a dispute about how this was ever going to end.
Yeah.
But she leaves the house and it's morning all of a sudden and her friends turn up in a car and she runs and joins them and her mum's waving her off. And then suddenly the windows of the car close, the roof comes up, it's the stripes of Freddy's jumper, which were red and green, apparently because they're the most discombobulating colours that you can put together on a jumper. And they're screaming. It's true. Like they did a study about the two colours that
you put them together. Didn't you tell us that during, well, I was so angry during the Mars Attacks episode, but you said, one of you said that the reason that the Martians are red and green was because of that.
It might have, but yeah, supposedly those colours next to each other are harder for the eye to process than other combinations of colours.
They make me think of Christmas. I'm sorry, I like it as a combination. I think it's festive.
Thank you. I'm pleased I wore the jumper then.
You look great. No one's taken that away from you. You look really nice. And then her mum gets obviously grabbed and ripped through back through the door.
Yeah.
So the problem that people have with this, it seems to stem from the idea that Wes Craven had one idea, which was not a happy ending, but a mysterious ending, where they got in the car, the friends were all back, and they got in the car, and they sort of drove off into the fog he wanted initially, and they sort of disappeared, and it was like you were left with this sort of unknowing aspect of, was it a dream? Is she still in a dream? Is this reality now? Have they come back from the dead? And you just didn't know. And Bob Shea, the head of New Line, was like, absolutely not. we need a twist. Like, Friday the 13th is a twist. Like, we want a twist at the end. Like, you know, sequels. Is he going to come back? And so they put in... Bob Shea was saying to Wes Craven, I want Freddy to be driving the car. I want them to get her to get in. And then suddenly it's Freddy in the driver's seat and he drives off laughing. And Wes Craven went... I've never hated something as much as I hate that idea right now.
I love that idea.
Do you really?
Yeah.
I think seeing Freddy sitting down driving a car would be like the Velociraptor in Jurassic Park 3.
Yeah, Wes said he thought it was demeaning to the film and refuted Nancy's victory, which is not what he wanted. He wanted her victory to be her victory.
Okay.
That she has defeated the monster and we don't need to set up a sequel here.
Okay.
But also, he didn't have to shoot it before then, like it's a feminine hygiene commercial, which is what they talk about on the on the commentary. It is a strange, that tone.
Do you mean tampons?
They called it a feminine hygiene commercial.
I just find that term stingy. That's all. Nothing wrong with it, you know.
Yeah.
Take it up with Heather Langenkamp.
So, Bob Shea basically was like, I want this ending. And then, so they put this ending in where...
This was the compromise, wasn't it?
This was the compromise where Freddie... isn't driving the car, he is the car.
That is not at all demeaning.
And then her mum gets dragged back through the door.
They did the drag through the door one time, and I, because it's obviously it's awkward, you know, it looks ridiculous. I think he genuinely thought they wouldn't end up using it. I think he thought if we just leave it that bad, it's not going to end up in the film. But he said he was so grateful to Bob Shea for making his dream happen of this film that he sort of did it for him and now he hates it.
Yeah, and Bob Shea's dad also hated it. Apparently when Bob Shea showed his dad it, his dad went, the ending is weird, and Bob Shea told him about the awkward compromise Wes and I had made over this, and his dad went, it's not good, you got to change it. And he was like, Dad, I can't. He's like, you're going to fuck up this movie. But they couldn't change it at that point. So that's what it is. I think the ending is, it's a bit of an issue because it's just a huge question mark. But we'll talk about that in the bits. The aftermath of this, it was a huge hit. 1.8 million budget, 57 million at the box office. There was a little bit of a dispute with Bob Shea and Wes Craven shortly afterwards because Wes Craven didn't want to direct a sequel, and he didn't have any ongoing financial participation in the sequels, according to Bob Shea.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so Bob Shea says he got mad at us, but nobody forced him to sign that contract.
Oh, God, sure.
That's bad.
Craven says, I received no money from the sequels and no money from the merchandising.
Oh, no.
And Freddy was kind of a big deal after this. He said that didn't come until 10 years later when Bob called me and said, you've been complaining about this and that. We'd like you to make one more Freddy film, even though we killed him off in the last sequel. So what the hell? I took the meeting. They offered me a cut of the merchandising and missing sequels money retroactively. And so they did sort of make up and he did get his money in the end. Off the back, Freddy became part of pop culture. I certainly remember this. Robert Englund says Freddy was in Johnny Carson's monologue every night. He was a guest VJ on MTV. Will Smith rapped about him. We became part of the culture. And
became a kid's character. It became a kid's toy, video games, cartoons. Like, it's bizarre. This maybe not a child molester, but he's definitely wanting to murder you.
England himself says, I didn't make any good money until Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3, and I eventually got some nice merchandising checks. Langenkamp, who Heather Langenkamp plays Nancy, says, doing Nightmare didn't really help my career much because people have a stuffy mentality about horror films. I kind of feel what a porno actress feels like trying to tell everyone how great her movie was. It's an interesting way of viewing it.
She does visual effects now.
Does she really?
Yeah, yeah. Her and her husband have got a special visual effects company doing horror effects.
Finally, as I mentioned already, Jackie L. Haley starred in the 2010 remake, which is rubbish, but he also did audition for the role of one of the kids in the original movie and didn't get it. So, yeah. Any more?
No.
No?
Great stuff. Shall we do the bits?
Yes, please.
Lovely. Christopher, what is your best scene?
It's raining Depp.
Nice.
Yeah, it's just great. To be honest, watching it this time, the Tina death is the most frightening and maybe the most effective. But it's such a surprise to see that visual with his character that I'm going for that.
Victoria.
So it's when Nancy turns her back on him. So I know it's silly and he sort of shimmers away and he's gone. But the old adage that if you're going to let kids watch a horror film, you've got to make them watch it all the way through is true because of that. So it's my favourite scene because I've never seen this all the way fucking through because I've been so scared of it my whole life. And then when she home alones the shit out of him, it is funny and he's no longer scary and it is ridiculous. And then she turns her back on him and he just becomes silly. And so I like the fact that as daft as it is, it mirrors that message of making sure that you see the resolution in order to not be scared of it. It's the same reason I didn't watch Alien until we did it because I was so fucking scared of it. I don't know if that would have helped actually watching it all the way through, but I had to turn off after the chest burster because I was just done for.
I don't know. I've not been to you. You've got an airlock? Have you got an airlock? For the resolution of Alien to work, you need to be able to blow something out of an airlock.
Yeah, that's true. So it's that scene for personal reasons. I think it's a bit daft, but it helped me a lot heal from the trauma of this film over the years.
I think, and it really makes a nice change from sort of a physical battle to just this idea of just like going. It didn't work. I'm just telling you right now. It doesn't work as a kid.
I believe
when
not.
You watch that, you don't suddenly go, "Oh, thank God! Oh, he's dead. I'll sleep easy tonight." You go that bit with the fucking blood coming out of the bed, which is also my best scene. Johnny Depp's demise, horrific and yet strangely beautiful at the same time. It looks something about that amount of blood, like The Shining and the lift doors. It's really quite something. MVW Victoria.
Freddy Krueger, obviously, for the grip he has on everyone's imagination and mine. I've been terrified of that person for many, 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 many years. And now I see it was for no reason because you can just turn your back on him and everything's fine. But yeah, it doesn't need me to say like how implanted he is into our dreams. So yes, it's an amazing thing to have achieved.
England.
No football.
Robert Englund that performance, that the physicality he brings to it. He said he saw it like a dance, and he managed to make himself look bigger and tougher and older, which he does just through his movements. He improvised a lot of it, doing the weird stuff with his tongue, coming up with "This is God." That was his line in the next film. "This is Primetime, Bitch," and one of the later ones, and his voice. Like, as one of the directors said, if he didn't have Robert's voice, you maybe wouldn't have him open his mouth, this character. But because he does, it's so effective. So it's Freddie for me, but because of England's performance, you know. And I love David, who is it you said was going to play? I love David Warner, but, you know, it would not have been the film it is with anyone else playing this role.
He said, Robert Englund said he actually came up with a voice from when they were doing the makeup tests and how long they'd take. And he'd spend days and days and days in a chair and he used to get more and more angry. And that's how he developed the voice. And he says it still comes out when he's stuck in LA traffic. He'll just be in his car and go, "Get out of the way, motherfucker!"
Everyone just starts crying.
I'm sort of going with both of you because I didn't really know who I was going to attribute him to entirely. It's Freddy Krueger. But, you know, it's partly Robert Englund. It's partly Wes Craven for coming up with it. Jim Doyle, who built the glove, which is such an iconic thing. He was the horror icon of my youth. And even as he got more and more ridiculous, he was still the best thing in every Freddy movie. So, yeah, it's that. And finally, what would you change, Christopher?
I mean, this isn't my reason, but maybe it didn't come up on the show, but get Johnny out of that crop top.
Oh, you do? No, you hate a crop top,
Alex. I didn't like that. But he's in bed, but Bill S. Preston wears his bloody crop top when he's walking around in the cold light of day. I can deal with someone sleeping in a crop top, although I wouldn't do it myself. But yeah.
But no, it's these mother-daughter scenes where it tips over into melodrama. And that was kind of the style of some of these teen movies and slasher movies of that era. But it doesn't work if it's the dialogue or those two actresses or those two characters. There's just something off about it. And I think it would be a better film if that was stronger, those scenes.
Okay.
What would you change, Victoria?
So, They're in Nancy's bedroom and she's going to turn her back on him and she's certain it's going to work. And she turns her back on him and he goes, I don't give a shit. And he murders her horribly. And then he looks straight at the camera and he goes, nanite. Cut to black.
Aren't you just contradicting your favourite scene?
No, but I didn't.
This is tragic.
It's fine. Isn't that better?
Do you know what? Based on, I've got two changes. First of all is I think they should have more than one coffee percolator gag. I think...
the rule of three.
I think she should bring one out and then bring another one out. just they keep coming from under her bed. I'd like that. But actually, I'm kind of with you, Vicky, because the ending doesn't do it for me. Mm. I think it's such, you know, yes, the jump scare at the end of the first Friday the 13th, the kid coming out of the water, is genuinely absolutely terrifying. And so I can see what they tried to do. And maybe you're right. Maybe they thought Vince Craven thought it would never make it in. But Nancy's mum being dragged through the door, it doesn't work as a jump scare because it looks silly.
It looks like a dummy.
Yeah. And it's not scary enough. It's not shot well enough to make you go, gah! And also, it doesn't really fit with what the hell is going on in the movie. This movie ends with confusion. After a movie where you really definitely, like you said, like why you like the bit where she disappears and possibly that should be the end, you just, like, although not the way you said it, because, like, I want her to win. I just think you need a victory. And I think Wes Craven initially wanted her, like you say, have a victory. And she doesn't. You end up, it's a question mark. You're like, is that a dream? Mm. Is she still in a dream? Was the whole thing a dream? Mm-hmm. And to walk out of a movie like this with questions like that, I think is a mistake. That is the end of the bits. Shall we do a quiz? Chris, have you got a quiz?
I have. I just thought of something.
Oh, go on.
Written it down. We're good. Okay, where is my quiz gone?
It's always working.
I've completely confused myself.
It's always working, though.
Okay, on Thursday, we are doing the film Candyman.
Candyman.
So what do they call candy in England?
Sweets.
Sweets. Is that a point?
1 point to Alex. You got it in first. The quiz has started.
Are you being serious?
The quiz has started. So I have got some English foods, and I want you to say what they are called in America.
Okay.
Where we have a different word for the same thing.
That's so hard. Okay.
So what do they call coriander in America?
Cilantro.
Oh, fucking hell. That was quick.
Correct. What do they call a courgette in America?
Zucchini.
Correct. Oh, this is good. This is good. What do they call jam in America?
Jelly.
Correct.
Oh, yeah, good.
What do they call jelly in America?
They don't have it.
Wobble, wobble, wobble. Wobble, wobble.
And you kick yourself.
They call it jam. I'm getting confused.
They call it jello.
Oh,
you didn't know that.
I didn't know that.
What do they call aubergine in America?
Aubergine. No, eggplant.
Alex, wasn't it?
No,
that was Alex.
No.
What do they call a toffee apple?
They call it a candy apple.
I'm giving that to Vicky.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
What do they call what do they call rocket? As in the rocket salad.
Arugula.
Arugula.
Oh, that's
Vicky again.
Damn it.
What do they call candy floss?
Taffy something. They call it.
You definitely know it.
Candy floss. Candy cane. Candy crush. Candy. No. Naming.
They call it.
Candy fluff.
I actually don't know.
No.
Cotton candy.
Oh, fucking hell.
Yeah, should have known that. That's stupid. I'm an idiot.
And finally, we're into the last one. Alex, you need this for a draw.
Mm.
What do they call fish fingers?
Seafood sticks. Sea sticks.
Fish pieces. They don't have them because they're horrible. They call them fish fingers.
Yeah. They call them...
They call them filial fish fingers.
Cod toes.
You're grinning your head off. It's so upsetting.
Fish.
This had better be funny.
Fishies.
It's quite funny. It's
fishos.
Quite funny.
Fishos. Fishos.
It's quite funny.
Fish candy. Sticky seafood monsters.
Alex has come really close so many times. The answer is fish sticks.
I said
you said seafood sticks.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Yes, sir.
So that is another victory to Vicky, 4-3. Well played, Vicky. But well done to both of you. You got into the spirit of that. I much appreciated it.
It was brilliant fun.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. Great then. We are done. We're going to be back on Thursday when it's the turn of Candyman. And Candyman is going up against Nightmare on Elm Street. We'll find out who wins our clash this week. But looking ahead to the week after, it is your choices, Victoria, isn't
it? Yes, it is.
Do you have a clue to whet our appetites?
I do. The clue is learn the scary rules like a pro so you can break them like an artist.
Snappy.
It's by Pablo Picasso. Just don't have a go at me. It's not kind of by Pablo. There's a bit he didn't say. Obviously.
Yeah, that's the idea, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it. So remind us once more.
Learn the scary rules like a pro so you can break them like an artist.
Got you. All right, that's a clue for next week. If you want to get in touch with us, we are on Twitter at ClashPod, or you can email us show@clashpod.com. Thank you very much for listening. Please subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts and rate and reviews as well, if you can. That is hugely appreciated. Speak to you on Thursday. Bye-bye.
I might take my jumper off.
I think you should.
I think you've got to.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. Their meditations range to fit your needs each day, from anxiety and stress, relaxation and focus, to building habits and taking care of your physical well-being. They even have expert-led talks on topics such as tips for overcoming stress and anxiety, handling grief, improving self-esteem, caring for relationships, and more. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real, frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.